It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Dueling tweets may be the subject of questions for coming today. Now, this all started when President Trump lashed out at his former attorney, Michael Cohen, sentenced last week to 36 months in jail, said the president directed him to make payments to two women claiming affairs, something the president has repeatedly denied. The president tweeted yesterday, "Remember, Michael Cohen only became a rat after the FBI did something which was absolutely unthinkable and unheard of until the witch hunt was illegally started. They broke into an attorney's office. Why didn't they break into the DNC to get the server or Crooked's office?" Well, then Comey fired back at the president, tweeting, "This is from the president of our country lying about the lawful execution of a search warrant issued by a federal judge. Shame on Republicans who don't speak up at this moment for the FBI, the rule of law, and the truth." Now, also, guys, coming up in questions likely will be allegations that Comey circumvented protocol and procedures when he sent FBI agents to the White House to interview Michael Flynn. Some Republicans are calling it very troubling.
In layman's terms, violated his Miranda rights, tricked him into not having a lawyer when in fact he was not only a suspect but a target. And I would not be surprised a bit that the conviction of Flynn is overturned.
So Comey sits down with members of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees today, guys, at 10 a.m. behind closed doors. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. It's going to be another busy day in Washington.
Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox. Sandy Rios with you on this Monday. It never ends, you know, and it shouldn't end in many cases. The whole case of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn is so appalling to me. I've been telling you that for, what, has it been 2 years? No, nearly. It's unbelievable what has happened to him, and I want to get into that in just a second. But I want to address the first part of Griff's report first. Remember that the FBI did go in and raid Michael Cohen's office, taking everything from him, which was highly unusual, highly irregular. No one talks about this. A breaching client-attorney trust, taking over, you know, I'm sure information about clients that have nothing to do with whatever they were looking for. And remember that they turned that information over to a judge. The judge then was supposed to review the information taken from his private files and decide which part to turn over to the FBI. That's the story anyway. But you may remember that that judge that they handed him to, remember, she was a female judge who attended George Soros' wedding, a close friend of George Soros. So this is how this goes. And so then the second part of this on General Flynn. So Comey is all huffy about the General Flynn situation, and you know, as well he should be. He has a lot of questions to answer. And we're going to talk about that. I'm going to lay it out as clearly as I can. But I think, first of all, I'd like for you to hear James Comey smugly telling an MSNBC audience that they set General Flynn up. Let's listen.
Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration, in the George W. Bush administration, for example, or the Obama administration. So if the FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official, you would work through the White House counsel and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
Yeah, so did you hear that? He is admitting that we did not follow protocol. We just sent a couple of guys over. And this is kind of, I want to give you some inside information. It's publicly available. It's not things that I know that other people don't know, but it's a compilation that of all my reading this morning. You may recall now that, I want to skip ahead for a second, that Judge Emmett Sullivan, who is overseeing Lieutenant General Flynn's case, has ordered Bob Mueller and his team to present all the information they have, the FBI 302s, which are the memos that FBI agents have to write immediately following interrogation or some incident that they're working on. It's required by their job that they do that immediately. The judge, Emmett Sullivan, wants to see all of that things, all of those things, because we're understanding now that, gee, there might be more than one 302. In fact, the original 302 that was written, that was referred to by Peter Strzok, he was one of the agents that interviewed Lieutenant General Flynn. That 302 never made the light of day. Peter Strzok refers to it in his text messages with Lisa Page, his lover and fellow FBI agent. She's an attorney working for McCabe. They talk about his memo. He says he hopes Andy's happy with it. We haven't seen that memo. And we also know that Peter Strzok said in one of his many testimonies that he didn't think Michael Flynn was guilty, and neither, or that he had lied. They thought he was telling the truth. So did the other agent. But then 7 months later, the 302 that's being presented to the judge is written by someone else. And we don't quite understand why it was written 7 months later after Peter Strzok was gone. And who wrote it? And how would they know if they were not the agent, unless it was the other agent, who also, as far as I can tell, has indicated that he feels Michael Flynn was innocent. And this is the way the thing went down. Just to the best of my recollection, this is, and I have said this on the air with you before, but it's been a long time. There's a lot of details to remember. General Flynn was barely in the White House. So was the Trump administration. And Andy McCabe calls him. They had worked together before. Meaning the FBI. They were trying, this new administration, to get settled in the White House. There were security concerns, and Michael Flynn was the national security advisor to the president. So Andy McCabe calls General Flynn, and he says, hey, I want to send a couple of agents over to talk to you about, just to talk to you about more of the security concerns. We've been ongoing conversations, and we want to talk to you also about your conversation with the Russian ambassador. Now, generally, and it's probably not worth it to have a counsel with you. I know that probably generally you go through the White House counsel, but that's going to be, we're going to have to involve the Justice Department if we do that, and it's probably going to be a hassle. So General Flynn says, oh, don't worry about it. Just come on over and we'll chat. And then Comey says in other memos, which I could read to you, but I'll just repeat, that they intentionally did not warn General Flynn that they were going to interrogate him, that they had illegally obtained his conversation with Kislyak. They had a transcript, and they were going to set him up, asking him things that he said with Kislyak, and using his own words to see if he remembered. And they were not going to warn him that they were doing that. And they also said that they wanted him to be relaxed, not on guard. They wanted it, they wanted just this. You can see how this is going, can't you? So General Flynn invites them in. He's jocular. They report that he's relaxed in his conversation. He views them as friends. Peter Strzok, who hates the president, is out to get him, we know later, and the other agent, who's not named in these documents. And so they go back and allegedly, according to Peter Strzok's test, write these 302, which says they don't think Flynn lied. But now Comey has said that he thinks he has testified two different ways. He's testified that the agents said they didn't think Comey lied, and he testified in another incident or stated publicly that Flynn did lie. So General Flynn, by the way, as the national security advisor to the president, had every right, and yay, it was his duty, to speak to the Russian ambassador. There was nothing wrong with that. They've made it out to be a crime. Charged him with what they call the, no, they charged. They just threw out the notion through Sally Yates, who was later fired early on by President Trump because she would not obey the president. She was completely insubordinate. She threw out that General Flynn was guilty of violating the Logan Act, which was a law, an act, I think, passed in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and has never been used, and the idea behind it is that private citizens should not be negotiating with foreign powers on behalf of the government. But General Flynn was not a private citizen. He was the incoming national security advisor to the president. The whole thing is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It would be funny if it weren't so tragic. So General Flynn goes through this, and right away he has a conversation with Mike Pence and evidently misleads Mike Pence on his conversation with Kislyak. Maybe he, who knows why? You could fill in the blank. Maybe he didn't think Mike Pence needed to know everything he said with Kislyak. I don't know. But that was the reason he was fired from the White House, because he allegedly misled Vice President Pence, and Vice President Pence was very upset about it. And so President Trump fired Michael Flynn. And because then Flynn later pled guilty to lying to the FBI. But the reason, as we understand it, as I understand it from what I'm reading and what I know from other people, that he pleaded guilty because he needed it to stop. He had drained his family of their finances. He had to sell his home. They were going after his son. He's got a real close family. And they were doing everything they could just to survive. They destroyed General Flynn's reputation, and they took away his resources and were coming after his kids. And he needed it to stop. And so now the judge overseeing this is asking for more information. He's asking for those 302s. That doesn't mean the right thing's going to happen here. I just pray it does. I pray that it does. I want to say that I'm going to give you an idea of what other people are saying about this. Jonathan Turley, who is a Democrat, by the way, he's a professor at George Washington University, wrote an article. Well, this is what he says. They put him in a cage and shot him. Turley says General Flynn's indictment, a canned hunt. Greg Jarrett's headline from Fox News, Michael Flynn is innocent, wrongly prosecuted by Mueller to hurt Trump. And then the Washington, or the editorial board of the Washington Wall Street Journal has a really good, concise telling of the facts here called the Flynn entrapment. And it's amazing. It's just amazing. And now we know there are more things. Oh, gosh, how am I going to do this? I'm running out of time again. I have to get this in. This is the part that you may or may not remember, but you must remember it. Robin Gritz is a former member of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. She was an award-winning FBI agent who worked overseas with some of the highest classified. She said, I led a squad of experts in extraterritorial evidence collection, overseas investigations, operational security during terrorist attacks events, oversaw Blackwater, Chucky Taylor, Robert Levinson, and other pivotal cases. She's an award-winning, highly respected FBI agent. She came back to Washington, D.C. to work for under Andrew McCabe, who hated her for some reason and began a series of charges against her. He said that she was lazy. They accused her of being mentally ill, all kinds of things, just scurrilous. And she was eventually fired from the FBI. And Robin has been speaking out about this and others who know her for years now. Michael Flynn had worked with Robin Gritz in overseas, in, I don't know if it was Iraq or one of the overseas missions. And they were good friends. They'd known each other for years. She worked with him and for him, and he interceded in this FBI situation. He wrote a letter to the Bureau, to Mueller, I think, at the time, talking about what a fine agent Robin was, upstanding, defending her. And meanwhile, she filed a grievance. She had filed a grievance against Andrew McCabe. Andrew McCabe found out about it, and that's when he went after Robin Gritz. That's how the story goes. Robin has actually submitted a letter to the federal judge who is overseeing the Flynn case. It's the Honorable Emmett G. Sullivan. By the way, a Clinton appointee, African-American. Very interesting. And he's been a good, solid on a lot of cases. An honest broker as a judge, thank goodness. And so Robin has submitted a letter now on behalf of General Flynn, explaining, laying out his character and all that has transpired. So you would think, wouldn't you think, that justice might be done? Wouldn't you hope and pray for that? That General Flynn would be exonerated, his reputation restored, that restitution could be made to him financially, and that he could find a position, maybe even in the Trump administration, that would justify and elevate him in a way he deserves after all of his service to the nation. By the way, remember that General Flynn is the one that ran afoul with Barack Obama, calling him out on actually his actions in the Middle East of the military, which he felt created all this ISIS, created ISIS. So he had already fallen into the crosshairs on that. They aided him. And so that's, I think, why he's been destroyed. Coming up next, Senator Tom Cotton on another very important issue. Stay tuned.
Here's some great News. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to.
We're not made to live in caves. We're supposed to embrace the mountaintop. This is Jim Garlow. When the Israelites turned from God and fell into national sin, Judges 6 tells us that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Things got so bad, the Israelites resorted to living in caves so they could hide. And it was all because of sin, which caused Adam and Eve to hide from God, and often does the same to us. Have you ever found yourself so overwhelmed by circumstances or by shame, you go into hiding? My friend, you were not made for cave dwelling. You're made for the mountaintop. So the first step towards victory is repentance. Confess your sin and return to God. Then let your light shine before all. We desperately need to do that as a nation and just as much as individuals. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
A devout Christian teacher was fired from a government-run school in West Point, Virginia, after he refused to call a girl who identifies as a boy by her preferred pronoun. The school district voted unanimously to fire Peter Vlaming, a veteran French teacher. They accused him of misgendering a student. The principal said calling a transgender child by the wrong pronoun is harassment and threatening. Mr. Vlaming said he's okay with calling the child by her new masculine name, but he drew the line at using the preferred pronouns. More than 100 students walked out of class to protest the teacher's firing, but the sex and gender revolutionaries in charge of West Point Public Schools were not swayed. So now a good and decent teacher, a father of four children, is unemployed because he refused to reject the teachings of the Bible, as well as basic human anatomy. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Everybody.
Sandy Rios back with you. Hey, you know what? Senator Cotton isn't joining us for another few minutes, so I want to continue with the Michael Flynn story. And I referred to a few things just a few minutes ago, which I would like to put on our Facebook page, just so that you have something to refer to. I realize when I'm telling you so many things and it's coming so quickly, you need something to follow up with. And so the Wall Street Journal editorial board statement on this is concise. It's called The Flynn Entrapment. We'll put that on our Facebook page, and let me just say that they end by saying they're hoping, of course, that the judge will exonerate him. And in regard to President Trump, if he does nothing else, President Trump has an obligation to former aides like Michael Flynn and to the public to declassify and disclose the FBI documents related to the FBI's Russian probe. It really is a shocking situation. And I want to also say that Robin Gritz's letter to Judge Sullivan is fascinating. We'll also put that on our Facebook page. So we'll do that. And then there's an article that there's a couple of articles. I think I'm going to put all these on because I just want you to have the information that you need. This is from American Thinker. It's an article by Daniel Sobieski, The Flynn Investigation, McCabe's Personal Retaliation. And it has it lays out the Robin Gritz McCabe story and more, too. And then last but not least, there's an article in this, I believe. I don't know where it's from. Sometimes these prints. Oh, The Federalist. Okay. And the title of this is The Federal Judge Overseeing Michael Flynn's Sentencing Just Dropped a Major Bombshell. All right, so we'll put those articles on so that you can read them. I want you to hear Joe DiGenova weighed in on this with Tucker Carlson last week and said it in a way that only Joe can. So let's listen.
He did not lie, and in fact, the FBI knew it. Let's remember what this is about. This was a pretextual crime created by the FBI and by Sally Yates, the acting attorney general. Remember, after the election, Hillary Clinton needed a reason why she lost. Enter Russian collusion. Part of that was to find somebody in the administration to frame for talking to the Russians. They found General Flynn. But in fact, all of General Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador and everybody else were legal. So why did the FBI approach him? They knew what he said. They knew it was legal. The answer is they wanted to frame him, and they succeeded. And he did not tell them false information. Some of it may have been paused. It may have been nuanced. He did not lie. And indeed, the agents who actual 302s are available said he didn't lie. And it's interesting that Mueller did not turn over the original 302s to Judge Sullivan today. He turned over an interview of Agent Strzok, which was done months later by Mueller's people. The answer is Michael Flynn was framed in order to get at Donald Trump. Sally Yates, James Comey, Peter Strzok, Andy McCabe all planned it. What you are watching play out in an American courtroom is one of the most disgraceful events in American criminal justice, and everybody on Mueller's team should be ashamed of themselves, and none of them should ever be allowed to go back into the Department of Justice.
Well, and Joe's right on that. He is. I mean, how could you see it any differently? He goes on, and I want you to hear the rest of what Joe DiGenova had to say to Tucker Carlson. Here it is.
The people on the other networks and the people at the FBI at that time in the Department of Justice wanted one thing. They wanted to find a way to destroy Donald Trump because he wasn't supposed to be elected. But he beat them. And once they were beaten, they got angry. And then they got vindictive. And then they got vindictive by using the criminal justice system, weaponizing it. And John Brennan at the CIA and James Clapper followed through on their promised threat to figure out a way to get the people that they didn't want elected in order to make up for the fact that she, Hillary Clinton, had lost. This has become one of the greatest scandals in the history of our country, and the media is ignoring it. And it is truly important that what you are doing by focusing on these stories continue to be done until there's a new attorney general and there can be a grand jury to find out who was it that leaked the conversation of Michael Flynn with the Russian ambassador. That was a crime. The leak to David Ignatius of the Washington Post exposing General Flynn's conversation with the Russian ambassador was a crime. And the question tonight is, why isn't that crime being investigated?
All right, so that's Joe DiGenova. And there are a lot more things to say about it. Of course, this is very complicated, and it's worth hanging on to. And, you know, I know it's discouraging because we see what's happening around us. We see that the Democrats have taken over the House, and now they're upping the ante in terms of investigations. I saw an article which repeated something we had already said last week, that President Trump, his entire family, all of his business dealings, his taxes, everything he's ever done is now being investigated. And they're trying to destroy him. And I honestly, I don't know how they haven't succeeded yet. And the other part of this is, if you try to talk to people that you know, your neighbors and friends, about what we're talking about this morning, they will look at you like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I spoke to you about, I was on an airplane about a month ago now, and my seatmate was a young doctor. We had a great conversation. He's certainly not on my side politically. We have very different views. And so as we got into discussing it, he said that the turning point for him in the 2018 election was when the bomber was the would-be bomber had placed these bombs in the mailboxes, homes of various Democratic operatives. And of course, he blamed that on President Trump. He's stirring up trouble. He's creating hatred. And that was almost, it could have been horrible. And that was a turning point for him. It was so reprobate. And I said, well, are you familiar with the shooting in Alexandria that nearly took Congressman Steve Scalise's life by a gentleman who was targeting Republicans on the field practicing baseball? You know about that story. You know what? What story? You don't know? You don't know about that gentleman who asked Mo Brooks in the parking lot, are those Republicans out there practicing? He had no knowledge. This man who kept up with everything, this doctor, brilliant, had no idea. And so you wonder why we have two Americas. It's because we are being propagandized by the press. And I have a clip that's going to show you that. This is a clip from CNN, Reliable Sources. Brian Stelter starts the conversation. And the conversation is on whether Kellyanne Conway, who's the senior advisor to President Trump, you've seen her many, many times. Kellyanne makes the case for the president every way that she can. And she's very combative, but I know Kellyanne personally. I know her to be extremely honest. Honestly, Kellyanne is just a woman of impeccable character herself. But she fights. She fights them hard. So this is CNN discussing Kellyanne being on their network. Let's listen.
If you watch CNN regularly, I know you have an opinion about this next topic. To interview Kellyanne Conway or not to interview Kellyanne Conway. There are differing opinions, even right here inside CNN. And that was visible on Thursday night after Chris Cuomo had a 39-minute interview with Kellyanne Conway on his show. Don Lemon called out Cuomo for it. Let me just show you a bit of their debate.
I know you don't think she should be on TV. I don't believe in silencing the other side.
It's not silencing the other side. It is not a right for someone to come on CNN and lie and deflect. This was a defective,
people do it all the time,
dismissive and histrionic display of non-answers.
But people do that all the time.
Please.
What's the right answer here? Let's talk about that and a grab bag of other big stories with CNN senior media reporter Oliver Darcy. Oliver, I've had Kellyanne Conway on this program three times. I tend to side with Cuomo. I know I'm going to get a lot of angry viewer email about this. What do you think?
I think, look, if Kellyanne wanted to come on and have a genuine discussion about policy that was rooted in facts, I think that would be one thing. But it's very clear that when she does come on, she's aiming to deflect. She's deceiving the audience. She's spreading misinformation. And I think that's the problem. I see Chris's point that he wants to show that there is this other side and that the White House cannot answer some of the pressing questions of today. But I think there are better ways that he can do that. He could point out that the White House basically has got rid of the press briefing daily. He could show and play audio of the president contradicting himself. There are ways that you can illustrate to the audience that the White House has no good questions for the pressing issues. A 40-minute sparring back and forth with Kellyanne Conway, I'm not sure what purpose that serves the viewer.
Well, I think you see the hollowness of the White House's arguments.
You don't need 40 minutes of that to see the White House's hollowness of the arguments. I think, again, you can show the president contradicting himself. We have audio tape of this. It's very easy to show to the viewer, and in a way that doesn't allow someone from the administration to come on for 40 minutes and spread misinformation to CNN viewers.
So now let's think about this. Kellyanne, she does go on CNN. She was on with Cuomo for 39 minutes. I didn't see that, but I bet you it was great television, which is what television stations used to want. They wanted compelling discussion, disagreement, argument. I'm sure Kellyanne gave Cuomo a run for his money, and I've seen them debate before. So the way they couch this is that Kellyanne, of course, is lying and deflecting. She is deceiving. She's spreading misinformation. They should, instead, the suggestion is made, they should just play clips, which would be edited clips, of course, by CNN, of the president contradicting himself. They could just present it, instead of having Kellyanne talk or answer questions, they could just package these little things of the president, and that would be sufficient. We don't need to hear from the White House directly, because all they want to do is lie and deflect. See, now, here's the thing. What I know is that CNN is the propaganda arm right now. So are the other networks, but CNN probably is worse. MSNBC, I don't know which is worse. But knowing the you can know some facts. Some things are just matters of opinion, but some things are facts. And what's factual are some of the things I told you today about General Flynn. And I'm not sure I bet you're not hearing that on CNN. Now, I'm not talking about Kellyanne talking about General Flynn, although she probably has. But the point is, some would like to ban her from CNN because, we don't need to hear from them. It sounds to me like if I had to translate that, it would be that Kellyanne has been quite convincing and powerful, and that's a bit troublesome because they can't really combat that. If she's foolish and feckless and it's obvious that she's lying and she's not, gaining any ground, they wouldn't be worried about this. The point is that this is supposed to be a cable news outlet, but they want to control the flow of information. And so they're talking about cutting Kellyanne out and playing edited clips of the president in her place. So you see how this goes. If you wonder why your neighbors and friends don't understand, it's because a lot of them watch CNN. They don't know what you know. They really don't. They just don't have any idea. And when they do hear things, they hear it from propagandistic point of view. I know that Fox does. Yes, some hosts on Fox do that sometimes too. No question about it. But, that does not mean that both are equal. It doesn't mean that I think a lot of the hosts on Fox are real straightforward, honest people that you can trust. And so I can't say that about CNN, and I can't say that about MSNBC. And because I know the truth of things, this is what I try to bring you as best I possibly can, the truth about the matter, and plus in including things that you're not going to hear other places, and you can see why. So anyway, enough of that, but I just wanted to show you. There's a couple of other things. By the way, the president has canceled the White House Christmas party for the press, which is a huge loss. By the way, I had the privilege of being at the White House Christmas party. They have several for different groups. And I was there when I was president of CWA. I think I've mentioned this. It was probably one of the best nights of my life. It was just drop-dead gorgeous. And just so thrilling to be inside the White House and to be able to walk around and be there for, a couple of hours, 3 hours maybe, hear the Marine Band and listen to the music and look at the decorations and see each historic room. It was wonderful. So the press always enjoys that. In fact, they usually have two back-to-back events, one for broadcast outlets and one for print. The president has canceled it. Nope, not going to do it. You're not going to be in the White House enjoying that this year. Now, on the Mueller investigation, a couple of other things I wanted to tell you. This is amazing. You remember, and we've referred to it this morning, Peter Strzok, the former FBI, disgraced FBI agent who testified before Congress. Remember all the dramatics of his face and all his protests? And then we heard we saw those email exchanges between him and his lover, Lisa Page, the attorney that worked for Andrew McCabe. How much they hated President Trump, and they were going to stop it. They were going to stop him from being president. It was amazing. That's just a tiny little glimpse into what they said. Well, it looks now like the Office of Special Counsel, that's Robert Mueller, deleted text messages from the iPhone of fired FBI agent Peter Strzok before turning it over to the Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General. They just deleted them. They just couldn't help it. They were scrubbed. Reminds me of Hillary Clinton. Does it remind you of Hillary Clinton? It should. The OIG said Strzok's cell phone was reset to factory settings, deleting all data stored on the device. So now it looks like they're not recoverable, according to the cell phone, I think it was Verizon, that they went to. So, oops, Mueller's team has gotten rid of the other Peter Strzok, Lisa Page exchanges, which probably, I'm guessing, been incriminating to the investigation. Meanwhile, Rudy Giuliani, based on the revelations in the Flint case, says President Trump will sit down before Mueller over his dead body. So, gives you an idea. Now, coming up next is now Senator Tom Cotton. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning.
pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. During the Bend to Justice Leadership Conference, Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii was asked why it was so difficult for Democrats to connect with voters. Senator Hirono responded that Democrats have so much information. They are really good at giving out all the information that touch people's minds, but not their hearts. She further explained, "We Democrats know so much. We're very smart that we end up telling everyone how smart we are. And so we have a tendency to be very left brain," indicating that the Democrat to voter disconnect is due to their intellectual superiority.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. We have a crisis of manhood in our culture today as feminism has demonized virtually every masculine virtue. We have prolonged adolescence into our late 20s, long after males should be making their own way in the world as men and no longer as boys. I've made an effort to help with that problem by writing a book on turning boys into men. I'm happy to announce that my brand new book on fatherhood, The Boy to Man Book, is now out and available for purchase. It's a user-friendly book designed for fathers to read with their 12 or 13-year-old sons. In the book, I use the Book of Proverbs as a training manual for fathers, a manual on how to grow a boy into a fully mature man. Order a copy of The Boy to Man Book today for a father you know at afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Here's American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
Len Ingram and Jim Duncan, two Texans, support and believe in our ministry here at AFA and AFR.
We know more about the laundry business than anything else. We know a little bit about a lot of things, but we know a lot about the laundry and dry cleaning business.
They created a laundry detergent to sell to folks to support AFA.
We just want to be able to provide a product that can be used by AFA to support the ministry.
When you wash your family's clothes with Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent, you can take great satisfaction in knowing that you're supporting the vital work of the American Family Association. It's a unique way to increase your giving to AFA. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more about the Redeem Clean products when you visit redeemclean.afastore.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This week, the U.S. Senate will decide whether to give early release to large numbers of felons, including some convicted of violent crimes. Surely, the world's greatest deliberative body would reject such a dangerous idea, but senators won't do much deliberating on this so-called First Step Act in the limited time available to debate this legislation during the present lame duck session. The good news is that Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas and John Kennedy of Louisiana have three amendments that would markedly improve this deeply flawed bill. One would exclude child molesters and other violent criminals from early release. A second would track the effectiveness of programs designed to dissuade release felons from returning to lives of crime. And the third would notify victims before offenders are allowed out of jail early. Memo to senators. The Cotton-Kennedy amendments are sensible and necessary. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Sandy Rios back with you. Those bumpers mean so much to me. We're in the middle of talking about all these serious things, and just to think about the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords is refreshing, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. What a great promise. Well, there's a lot of things about the government that a lot of shoulders are bearing right now, and there are some good men, mostly men, who are serving us in Washington very few women that I would brag about, honestly. And one of those was elected. I remember interviewing him when he was running for office, Senator Tom Cotton. He had been a veteran of the wars. He fought, I think, for 11 different years. He was in Afghanistan with a provincial reconstruction team with 101st Airborne. He'd graduated from Harvard, was working as a clerk for for U.S. Court of Appeals, and left his job, his very good job with a great future, to go and serve the country and then to come back and run for office. I mean, let me say before I let him talk, as so often, I have to tell you, I've been at this for a long time, so often we champion people. We're excited about the prospect of them being elected. We work hard, and then they get there, and they disappoint. They go the way of Washington. It happens more than it doesn't happen. But that has not happened with Senator Tom Cotton. I am so happy to say he's been a champion on so many issues, outspoken, shown a ton of valor. And I'm grateful for that, and I'm glad I had a chance to say it to him. Senator Cotton, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, thank you very much for the kind words and for your support. And Merry Christmas to you and all of your listeners.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yep, it's a good thing to have Christmas, to be reminded of other things. But let me just ask you a common question before we get into this. What's the atmosphere like in the Senate right now? Are you guys worn out, or is there still some energy to actually see these things through in terms of the budget, the border, the criminal justice, which they're going to talk about? Are people getting weary, or is there at least some element of energy to get this thing done the right way?
Well, Sandy, I'm not where I can tell you that much. I'm willing to work around the clock and through the end of the year, if necessary, for the people of Arkansas and for the country to finish up our business, to make sure that we don't pass flawed sentencing reduction legislation to try to get the money we need to secure our southern border. You know, I had a lot of long years in my life, whether it was working a farm growing up as a kid or being in Iraq and Afghanistan in the Army. I'm happy to work a few long days in the Senate. Not exactly backbreaking work compared to what a lot of folks around the country have to do.
Yes, and I guess I could get specific about how unwilling the Senate is to work. I wasn't going to do that, but I've said, trust me, I've talked about that before. Yeah, so you're the exception, not the rule. But all right, so this is a very big week. The government runs out of money, I think, midnight Friday night. Always when that happens, a lot of chicanery begins. And I think one of those is trying to get this justice reform bill passed. And let me just say, before we start this conversation, that the way this is being presented, the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been the kind of the face of this. Kim Kardashian and her husband were famously in favor of it because of a relative that was released from prison. But we're being told this. It's the first criminal justice reform bill in decades. It's wonderful. It stops the practice of incarcerating nonviolent first-time drug users there's so many of them in federal prisons who just accidentally were caught with a joint, and I'm overstating here, but put in prison and having to serve long sentences, and now they're going to be released. It's about righting wrongs in the prison system. It's going to help black inmates especially. This is all about the black community. And so my question to you is, Senator Cotton, how in the world could you oppose such a great bill?
Well, Sandy, when you portray it that way, it does indeed sound attractive, but that's simply not the facts of the matter. There are almost no federal inmates who are first-time, low-level, nonviolent offenders. And even for the very small fraction that might appear from their convictions to be so, they almost certainly pleaded down from a more serious offense, sometimes a violent offense. I can't vouch for what all 50 states do, but if you're in federal prison, you're there for a reason, and you're a pretty serious offender. And that's why I have opposed from the beginning any effort to reduce sentences on the front end, like eliminating the three strikes lifetime sentence, or reducing sentences for second-time drug dealers, or giving judges more discretion to shorten sentences. I also oppose early release on the back end for serious repeat or violent felons. Unfortunately, this legislation would do both those things.
Yeah, let me just also, this is we have to look at the overview of things if we can't get in the weeds of legislation. We're going to get into the weeds a little bit. But we've got Jared Kushner, whose father was in prison. So he has a motivation there's nothing wrong with wanting to help people in prison. That's not the point. And yet that's the way it's being couched. Like the rest of us are hard-hearted. But in joining him in this is people like Dick Durbin, who's euphoric over this bill, and the communist Van Jones. And he is a communist because he claims that as a moniker. There are people like that who are thrilled about this, which always makes me go, really? What are they so excited about in this bill, from your perspective?
Well, the bill is certainly made for some strange bedfellows on both the right and the left. Sandy, I respect all the supporters of this bill. I think they're motivated by good intentions. I just think they're wrong about its impact. Because this bill, again, would reduce sentences on the front end for serious drug traffickers, but also lead to early release on the back end for serious and repeat and violent felons. I do support in concept the idea that we need to try to prevent recidivism. The recidivism rate in this country is way too high, so I would support legislation that would provide more opportunities for job, career, technical training in prison, better opportunities for GED classes, certainly better opportunities for counseling and mentoring, especially faith-based programs. Those are the kinds of things on which we could have found common ground. Unfortunately, this legislation is going to also reduce sentences on the front end and allow for early release for some pretty bad criminals on the back end, and that's why I can't support it and why I've got a few amendments to try to fix some of the worst problems.
Yes, and my understanding, too, Senator Cotton, is that the actual text of the bill has been really slow to come to the forefront, so it's been hard to know exactly what it's all about. And I have to say very clearly that a lot of Christian-affiliated groups, have jumped on board with this bill. I personally think they are not thinking this through. It seems like a way to show good faith and mercy and justice. That's what I think they think they think. And they don't really understand what they're doing. And it has split the conservative movement, conservative evangelicals for sure. AFA comes down on the side of Senator Cotton on this, and we're going to get into his amendments in just a second. And we've asked and are asking you to call your senators to support Senator Cotton, and Senator Kennedy is joining with him in these amendments. And you can do that. Well, you know what? This is an alert. Doesn't give the exact thing. You have to get an AFA action alert, but you can do that. You can contact your senator and ask them to support the Cotton-Kennedy amendments without getting this alert. And by the way, you need to sign up for the AFA action alert so that you can respond to these things in a timely fashion. And I know that you will. Senator Cotton, so you've tried to make this bill palatable, trying to correct the problems in it. Can you kind of give us a layman's version of what it is you're trying to improve?
Sure. Senator Kennedy and I have three distinct amendments. We'll expect votes on them tomorrow or Wednesday. The first would simply exclude from potential early release some of the worst kind of offenders, for instance, those convicted of coercing a minor into sexual activities or prostitution, bank robbers, carjackers, those convicted of hate crimes. It would also have a catch-all provision for violent felons and sex offenders, something that the bill's sponsors have said all along is in the bill, but frankly, it's not. The Second Amendment would also fill a very glaring gap in the legislation that has nothing to do covering victims' rights. The Second Amendment would simply say victims have a right to be notified and heard before their assailant is released early from prison. And then the Third Amendment would simply direct the Department of Justice to track the recidivism rates of persons released under this legislation, so Congress can revisit the bill and the bill's approach in future years to determine what is and is not working.
Let's go back up to your First Amendment so that we can at least understand a little bit of this. Under the current wording, see, I think the question's going to be, we thought this was about low-level, one single-use drug people who were incarcerated for too long. Now we're talking about letting child molesters and violent felons get early release? That doesn't make sense. What's the connection there?
Well, Sandy, I know. There's about 15,000 sex offenders in federal prison. That's a lot. It's almost 10% of the entire federal prison population. And almost three quarters of them are identified as low risk. That means that under the terms of this bill, without our amendment, they very likely could be released early from prison. Coercing a minor into illicit sex activity or prostitution is one of the most commonly prosecuted sex crimes in the federal court system. Yet, strangely, it's not excluded from early release in this legislation. That's why our amendment addresses that problem, because experts have said that some of these sex offenders are both the most likely to commit future crimes, and they're also some of the most conniving and manipulative criminals in the system. So if you tell them, take these classes or attend these events and you'll get out early, they will almost certainly do so.
Yes, and put more people at risk. And you've talked about victims' rights in your Second Amendment. And let me read this. This is from Arizona Voice for Crime Victims. The legislative process and the bill's substance has been an insult to victims of crime and their loved ones. The bill's drafters made no effort to consider the input of crime victims and have failed to provide legislators, crime victims, and the general public time to evaluate the bill. The First Step Act was drafted behind closed doors. The bill's authors took the time to consult moneyed special interest groups, but never reached out or considered the input of victims of crime. And Force 100 is another victims' right group that's opposing this, talking about the troubling aspects of the First Step Act. And it's so you're trying to correct those things. All right, these are three amendments that we are supporting. AFA is supporting. We are asking you to contact your senator and ask them to support the Cotton-Kennedy amendments of the First Step Act. But Senator Cotton, so there's always chicanery. So chicanery is happening with this. They're sort of calling your bills or your amendments poison pills, right? That's what some are saying.
I have seen that term used, Sandy, but frankly, my amendments are entirely consistent with the sponsors' rhetoric. They've said all along that their bill would not allow violent offenders or sex offenders out of prison early. The unfortunate fact is the bill they released last week does just that. We're simply trying to change the bill in a way that is consistent with the sponsors' own rhetoric. Likewise, they say that they want to give victims a say in the process. The bill doesn't do that either. So our modest amendment would allow victims a chance to receive notice and to be heard before their assailant is released early from prison. So I don't see how it's a poison pill if my amendments are entirely consistent with the sponsor's own talking points.
So let's make understand. We only have a couple of minutes left, and I know this is complex, but to make it a long story short, it looks as though Senator McConnell, who was not going to allow a vote on this bill because it was splitting the caucus, the Republican caucus, is now allowing it, but he's also promised to allow a vote on your amendments. Where does this? What kind of support do you have, and how do you see this playing out?
That's right, Sandy. Senator McConnell, wanted the sponsors to show that they had a certain level of support, not just from Democrats, but from Republican senators as well. They did so. The president asked them to bring it up, so he brought it to the floor for debate and a vote. But he also ensured that the Kennedy-Cotton amendments will be called up and voted upon. So I expect that vote will happen tomorrow or Wednesday. I would urge all of your listeners to contact their senators and ask them to support these very modest amendments that simply reflect the sponsors' own talking points. They need to hear from as many people as they can. I just can't believe many senators want to vote in favor of child molesters and against victims' rights.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but then there are a lot of things happening right now that it's hard to believe. Nevertheless, God bless you for doing this, you and Senator Kennedy, and we're supporting you, and we want other people. This is a time when you can make a difference. Again, call your senator and ask them to please support the Cotton-Kennedy amendments to the prison reform bill. And so they'll get it, they'll know what it is, and they need to hear from you today. Senator Cotton, thank you so much for your service again in this new iteration of your life, and we look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning, the Monday before Christmas. Do we have two Mondays? Well, it's getting close. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Thanks for listening. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.